Emily Rooney, and this is Boston Public Radio. It is our week in review. It's been a golden week for some people, including Michael Phelps and the U.S. women's gymnastics team. Not so much for Mitt Romney, who was hoping his overseas trip coinciding with the Olympics would be sort of a reminder of his heralded ties to the 2002 Utah Olympics. Instead, a series of blunders got him poor road trip marks. Locally, the governor finally signed that habitual offenders bill, but not before attempting to change it at the last minute, but that didn't work either. Joining me to talk about all of this are Peter Gelsinis, a columnist for the Boston Herald, R.B. Scott, journalist and author of Mitt Romney, an inside look at the man and his politics, and Chris Ferrone, a writer for the Boston Phoenix. Welcome to all of you.
Thanks.
So I don't know where you all stand on this habitual offenders bill, but I'm one of these people who sincerely believes that nothing good has ever come out of something that's mandatory. I mean, we can look at that right across the board. I mean, I feel desperately, sorry for Les Gosul and the family of the police officer that was killed a few years ago. But it seems to me that we already had a system in place to deal with these guys. And mistakes are going to be made in the future. There are going to be other people that are paroled that don't even qualify under this. They weren't necessarily people who committed three serious crimes. So, I don't know. I think you always have to have some leeway. You have to have some judicial discretion. You have to have some, lock them up, throw away the key. It doesn't work for me.
I think you'll always have the corresponding emotional riptides, though. I don't think the fact that this gets signed, there's always that inclination to believe that when something like this happens, then you've taken care
exactly.
of the problem.
Exactly. It won't.
And what'll happen is that, as you say, that some other situation will arise. It'll be horrendous,
yep.
and it'll generate a firestorm of emotion and publicity.
Yeah, we try to legislate away all of our problems.
Yeah, but again, in that cauldron, it's hard for I felt for Patrick in a way about the idea of judges' discretion and stuff. But you're in that echo chamber that. The media fan,
for sure,
and it's difficult if not impossible.
I thought the governor handled this really well. I'm just going to give him high marks for that. I mean, he tried to do the right thing, and in the end, he was really forced, by public pressure and emotional pressure.
I think, as I wrote in my column in the Phoenix this week, it was despicable that this happened, that it happened the way that it did.
You said it was ignorant and depraved.
Ignorant and depraved.
Explain yourself, Chris.
I cover the prisons, I cover communities that are truly affected by violent crime, and, we're dealing with a state here, less than 2% of the Massachusetts Department of Correction budget is spent on rehabilitation and reentry. We're talking about, I could go on and on, really. We have about 11,000 people in prison here. We're going to have about 14,000 by 2019. Year after year, I hear nothing about any of this on Beacon Hill. The Massachusetts Department of Correction is absolutely out of control. So to watch, this bill, which is, some of it, maybe 600 nonviolent offenders will be let out on it. It's just really been a letdown. And then to watch, all the photo ops and following the father to the gravesite, I can't even believe. And you would think that this would be a bipartisan decision in the opposite direction, to save the state money, to really keep people off of this, violent criminals off of the streets, but it's not. More than 98% of the people who are incarcerated are going to be back on the streets, whether you like it or not.
You're hammering on an issue that's very near and dear to me. I mean, if that pathetic soul who killed Melissa Gosul had gotten one shred of rehab in prison, I'm not a bleeding heart liberal on this. I've just said they don't do anything for anybody, so when they get out, their habits are worse.
And I also just want to stress that this is the 27th state. Not one study ever shows that a three strikes law, any kind, for nonviolent, for violent, for everybody, reduces violent crime. So if that's supposed to be the purpose, there is no evidence to it.
Yeah. All right, RB.
I have nothing to add to that. it's a serious issue, but I agree that there's never been any evidence that would suggest that these kinds of laws work. In fact, they usually end up putting people in prison permanently that shouldn't be there. And then you have to deal with that problem as well.
Yeah, it's funny to me that the only kind of pushback we got was largely from the minority community, who thought it would unfairly target them because, for the obvious reasons, and, a lot more violent crime happens in the black community. But there wasn't a larger voice on this. I mean, first of all, the two people involved in these heinous crimes weren't minorities, but there was no, I didn't hear a very intellectual discussion about this.
Yeah, but the idea too, this notion of tough on crime. I mean, It'll filter through what's going to happen in a couple of months. It'll filter through, you know, it'll eventually filter through presidential discussions on this, because this is a, you know, bedrock conservative issue that people want to beat the drum on. And you're right. I mean, Chris is right. You know, the more progressive, the more intellectual way of looking at this is. You know, never seems to get, there doesn't seem to be, and shame on liberal people for not banging the drums just as hard on this issue. The idea of, you know, what you can do in prison, what you should do in terms of rehabilitation and trying to retool people and mend their lives. But it seldom gets the kind of constituency that has the volume that the lock them up and throw away the key. Or as well said, what was that? The joys of busting rock? He came in on that.
Yeah.
You know?
I think if Governor Patrick had vetoed the bill, it would have become a presidential election year issue.
Sure.
A big-time issue.
For him. And because of his ties with Obama.
Exactly.
There was already all sorts of talk about, you know, if it didn't happen, right, who was going to take the blame next time, you know, something happens. And, you know, I've spoken with a lot of activists who were outspoken, you know, again, in opposition to this bill, who said, well, who's going to take the blame when somebody facing a third strike, you know, starts shooting and refuses to go back and starts blasting his way out of a life sentence?
I also think what you need, too, is maybe you need, you know, we have some pretty progressive sheriffs in this state. You know, I think they're on the front lines, and if their voices, if they became even a more fierce lobby for something like this, because, you know, they can speak to what can be done or what should be done in correctional facilities.
You know, I'm just going to want to wrap this up, but I do want to just listen to Les Gossel one time, because there's a larger point to be made here. Let's hear Les after the governor signed this bill.
Innocent children, women, our wives, our daughters will be protected from those people that don't understand the value of somebody else's life. The habitual repeat offender will go from a revolving door to a steel door.
That's hopeful. That's wishful thinking, but it's unlikely.
You know, I just want to add, you know, I've done a lot of reporting over the years, and I know everybody else here has, about kind of like, you know, the old school Charlestown criminal, let's say. You know, the person who you've heard, you know, they did like 10 years for murder, they've been in jail 30 times. The system, which is far from perfect now, you know, isn't that, that's not what it is anymore. That risk is not as awful as it used to be. And I think that should have been a starting point.
Mm. And it's also a danger when you know, a bill is associated with a pretty young woman or a face or a cutesy name. It all becomes all wrapped up in the emotion of it rather than the issue itself. But almost every piece of legislation that we've had that's like this, some big thing, you know, Melanie's Law, it's always associated with one person, usually a pretty young white woman.
And that was compounded today when we saw the other person who was associated with in the news complaining that, you know, the brother of the Woburn police officer, Officer McGuire, who, yeah, worked hard for this bill. He wasn't invited to the signing.
Why wasn't he, by the way?
I don't know. The governor's office hasn't exactly been returning my calls on this issue. But in all honesty, I think that really kind of just almost showed the selfishness. This was about, if this was really about all victims of violent crime, shouldn't they all have been invited?
Why was Les Gossel there? I agree. All right, a couple other things that the legislature moved on today. I'm going to be stinking on all of these things. The right to repair bill. I mean, would Macy's tell Gimbel's? I don't understand this. Why should you know, Toyota or Audi or anybody give your code secrets, your computer data to any repair shop? I don't get it. I don't see why. I mean, from a consumer point of view, I understand it, sure. I mean, I could take my car anywhere and get it fixed probably more cheaply, but why should we be able to do that?
Well, it's a consumer issue, and it's obviously a business issue for Toyota and Volvo and every other car dealer, that if they can get you to come back to their car dealerships.
Well, why shouldn't they have the right to do that?
Well, as a person who buys a car,
I bought one yesterday.
I would prefer to. Good for you. The economy has turned around.
It's a real annoyance. You know, I mean, I'm going to have to go take it to the dealer, but I understand why they would want proprietorship over that.
So the answer to the question, if I've had this happen, I have a Volvo that if you go to reset the idiot lights, you have to take it back to the Volvo dealer, or you have to pay the local repair shop $75 to have the idiot lights reset.
Because?
You, because Volvo has the keys and they control it.
I think part of it, though, is, you know, you don't have grease monkeys anymore. You know, all of these things are you know, everything is computerized. And a lot of times, particularly if you buy a new car, then you're under warranty. And that kind of, you know, negates the idea of trying to find. But even if you... You know, you can't go to the gas station down the street anymore.
Oh, yes, you can.
Well,
I had a 7-year-old Subaru. I could take it to my gas station.
Well, 7 years old. I had two Volvos for a total of 30 years, and I could do that after a while. But most of the guys I went to, long after I was on warranty, were Volvo mechanics. So
they
knew what to do. You know, I mean, it's not like. I've got a car now that I don't even know, you wouldn't know how to do anything
but
to
it. But it's proprietary. Would Coke tell Pepsi, you know, that they have to give them their secret formula?
It isn't that issue. It's an issue of
technology.
A manufacturer sharing the information.
Am I alone on this?
Chris, go. I'm not exactly with anyone. I mean, I don't drive, first of all.
Oh, what?
But, no, I'm a New Yorker originally, and I'm poor.
But, you white here?
But no, in all honesty, it's like, I think it's kind of interesting because there was money on both sides of this issue.
Sure.
You know, I always kind of like seeing almost a more balanced fight, and I guess maybe that's why we saw kind of a compromise in the legislature.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it hasn't actually passed yet.
No.
What's going to happen is... It takes it out of the possibility of it going to a ballot, right?
Right, and I was interested. I don't know what the polling said on that.
Yeah. I'll tell you, you know what'll probably end up. I mean, if dealerships are smart, that's where they can kind of counteract
this.
What
will they do?
Well, they'll give you the kind of service you want in the sense that you know when you go in there to have it done, they'll give you a loan, a car, they'll give you these incentives to go there
and negotiate that right, my friends.
You know, right? Well, I'm in that situation now where I'm very very happy with the dealership, and the car is 3 years old, and when I go up there. You know, I've got a loaner. It's very easy. I mean, I could go back to the days when I used to crawl under the car and change my own oil. I don't do that anymore.
Impressive. I'm impressed.
Instead of Coke and Pepsi, I'd say that for me, the thing that this is most similar to is computers. And, you know, as an Apple user, you know, where are you going to go? You have to go to the Apple store.
So, now, Apple isn't about to give away that trade secret. You're not going to be able to go to Dell and get your Apple fixed.
No, and so I think that's a fair comparison.
All
definitely.
Right, very good. All right, I'm talking to Chris Ferrone from the Boston Phoenix, Peter Galzinis from the Boston Globe, and journalist R.B. Scott. Let's move on to... presidential. What are you guys laughing about?
Oh, you sent me to the Globe, which is great.
Oh, I did? Shoot. The Boston Herald. You should have corrected me right away. Peter Galzinis, the Boston Herald. How can I get that wrong? Anyway, presidential politics. So Mitt Romney goes over to London like a day or two before the Olympics start. We talked about that last week. You know, he had the gaffe about saying that he was disturbed by certain things that he saw from security. He was forced to apologize about that, but it seems like he dug himself even deeper. A couple other things happened, including comments he made about the economy in the Middle East. Here's what he had to say.
Do you have democracy, free enterprise, human rights, education, rights for women? These things make a difference in your economy.
What's wrong with that? That's true. That's absolutely true. I mean, it may be offensive to some people, but I didn't think that that was a bad... I thought that was a bold, accurate, truthful thing to say. Oh, nobody wants to get in on that.
I think in the context he's in, and the stage he's in the international stage he's in, and the kind of diplomatic reverberations it has...
He should have been more political? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think what he's saying on its face is you know really can't be disputed in many respects. But in a situation that you know where religion and those controversies have gone back for eons, I mean, it's going to be seen as abrasive.
We are always picking on our politicians for being nothing but political, for being boilerplate. You know. Just saying the same thing on the stump over and over again. Here's a fresh, honest answer to a question that...
And that's the point that's missed here. He's still running to the right and playing to that base.
Right.
And he will be through the convention later this month. And so he goes to London and on a subject he knows a lot about, he points out in their face what's wrong with the London Olympics, which is that they waited till the last minute to solve their security problems. And if you looked at the stands, women's gymnastics,
all week it's been empty.
They're empty. I've been to the Olympics many times, and the toughest ticket to get in town is for the women's gymnastics competition, and you've got empty seats.
They sold them all to corporations.
Something was wrong in their distribution. Well, that was true in Utah, too, and it was true in other Olympic games. So he had the courage to say, there's something wrong here, and his base is loving that because for the reasons that you say, that they're looking for a politician who is willing to speak in their face. Is there any question as to what his view of Israel is after this trip to the Middle East? I don't think so. Not to mention the fact that he's best friends with Bibi Netanyahu.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, it's almost like who is – Palestinians are upset with him, but aren't they usually upset with American politicians?
Well, they are. And the answer is he could have been more diplomatic and he could have been smarter about it. And clearly he's a smart guy. So I'm looking at it and saying this is deliberate.
Right.
He is saying this because he's playing to a particular audience.
Sure. Well,
and there are people out there who were cheering what he said in London and what he said in Israel.
We're not hearing that
Israel.
Part of it.
Yeah, but I mean,
well, they're not us.
Mm. I think the idea, too, is it just, you know, there's always this hope that if you're going to try to be diplomatic, then you're going to try to see if you can somehow, you know, moderate the tensions.
The weasel
there.
Words
so,
come out.
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, the Palestinians have got a right to react the way they're going to interpret that, which they did. And again, you're absolutely right. To the base, it's probably not going to hurt them. It may help them. But I think in terms of the general kind of sense of trying to, you know, deal with this forever and ever in terms of the issues in the Mideast, you know, does it help or hurt?
Yeah, the issue is a little different. I think it's a little deeper, more complex than the soundbite that we just heard. I mean, he's been going around misquoting economists.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
And as far as, and you know, he didn't, in that particular comment right there, he doesn't say that, you know, culture is the only thing that will, you know, as linked to economy. You know, that's kind of how the left is playing this, that's how it's said. But from what I understand, there's a number of things that contribute to economy, you know, where a place is located, weather, you know, so I think, you know, intellectually it was stupid, but I would agree with Emily in that, you know, this is him speaking his mind.
And I think the media did him no favors because no one has really, really parsed or vetted what he said. And,
well,
you know, where's
the
truth squad there? Yeah, true enough. Meanwhile, one of his press people, Rick Korka, I have to set this up because the media has been following him around, as of course they would because he's the presumptive nominee for the Republican presidential nomination. And so they were shouting questions at him after this latest gaffe about the Middle East, and here's how it went. This is Rick Gorka, one of his press aides, responding to him.
Governor Romney, do you have a statement for the Palestinians?
What about your gaffe?
Governor Romney, do you feel that your gaffes have overshadowed your foreign trip?
Show some respect.
We haven't had another chance to ask him questions.
This is a holy site for the Polish people. Show some respect.
All right, so this is kind of funny. He's saying, show some respect. This is a holy site for the Polish people. And meanwhile, I don't know if you could hear it in there, but he said, kiss my... That was Rick Gorka. But I have to say, once again, I feel like I'm taking... I was embarrassed by the press on that. That's one of those John Stewart's... That's one of those John Stewart moments, you know, when, the occupier screaming at, like he's going to stop and give some thoughtful answer with a bunch of people screaming and yelling at him. But I did get a Rick Gorka saying, this is a holy place for the Polish people, and then telling the reporters to go kiss my
ass. Yeah, so, you know, it would have been better for him just to keep quiet, you know, just to shut up. I mean, instead of, he makes it more of an issue.
Who, Rick Gorka?
Yeah.
Remember when in South Carolina... I think it was South Carolina 4 years ago when Glenn Johnson, Romney was coming into a press conference and he asked him a question and Eric Fahrenstrom got all over. You can't ask the governor those kinds of questions. And the answer, I'm thinking to myself, why the heck not?
Right.
It was the fact that he said, I don't have any lobbyists.
Oh, yeah, that was good. We ran that bite again recently.
And
that was a great
Johnson
moment.
Johnson brought up, what's his name?
Ron Kaufman.
Ron
so
Kaufman.
What do you mean they don't have any lobbyists?
But the point is he got reprimanded, right?
By Eric Fahrenstrom for being disrespectful.
The problem, and that's the same thing that happened here. The problem is he's not talking to
anybody. Yeah, he's not talking
to
except for Fox News.
The only time you can ask the guy a question is when you're on the rope line, which you do sound like a shrew when you're yelling questions like that out. But if you have no other opportunity, what's a journalist going to do who's got to create a story every single day that they're in Europe?
Meanwhile, this just in, I just heard from Jeff Keating in the control room that the Romney campaign has announced that Rick Gorka is taking a break.
We were just discussing that in the green room. Not fired, taking a break.
Now you've embarrassed me because I said Romney never fires anybody. It's just they just handle the situation.
They put him in a closet.
Is Fernstrom next?
No, Fernstrom.
Fernstrom survived that Etch-a-Sketch thing. All right, so we gotta speculate here for a minute about Mitt Romney vice presidential choices. Leading contenders, of course, are Ohio Senator Rob Portman, Republican Paul Ryan, Senator Marco Rubio from Florida. Lesser contenders, Condoleezza Rice, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, and Senator Kelly Ayotte from New Hampshire. All fingers seem to be pointing, Peter, do you think, to Rob Portman from Ohio?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a guy, in Romney who is just, beyond cautious and beyond safe. And I think this is it's dull, but it's in keeping with, his whole public approach to things. So I don't see Kelly Ayotte. I don't see anybody who is going to have more personality than he does.
He's not going to do that.
That's why John Thune got
yeah, he's too cute.
He's gorgeous.
He's too handsome.
Yeah.
Like, you can't have two matinee mitts
right.
on one
exactly.
seat.
Yeah, either well,
I can't
too much personality.
I can't even really picture Rob Portman. I've seen his picture dozens of times, but I can't
That's
really,
the point.
Yeah, yeah that's the idea.
He's generic.
Rubio's off kind of handsome, too.
He's nuts. Yeah. And, this is crazy. I really hate when people use, like, token or anecdotal examples, but my mother's an educator in Palm Beach County in Florida, and she's had to deal with it. I mean, he's truly deranged. And
who?
Rubio.
Marco
and,
Rubio. How so? Come on.
No, I'm serious. And even if you start looking, I think even if you go back, things that he said in public over the past year, I don't think he's safe
enough. Well, deranged is good. I mean, look at Joe Biden.
I couldn't believe that one either.
He's sweetly deranged.
I know, but that works. It works if you get the crazy.
Are we covered by slander laws here?
I certainly hope so. Is there anybody we haven't taken apart yet?
I agree with what you're saying. I think that if you're doing the number crunching, that's exactly who the candidate's going to be. But I got a feeling he's going to surprise. And I think I mentioned in a thing we shared before the show that I'm not ruling Condoleezza Rice out of the picture, and he has been partial to promoting
really?
Women to begin with, and I'm not ruling out Chris Christie from New Jersey, and to some extent, Christy Whitman as well, although they had some issues in the primary election campaign. That may rule her out. But I think he may surprise us on this.
You think
one.
A woman would help? I mean, I'm just never clear about that, whether that's helpful or not.
I think an intelligent, experienced woman would help. I think...
Kelly Ayotte's too green.
Enough slander for one day.
Exactly.
I just wonder, too. I mean, I wonder, Condoleezza Rice has, all that history.
Mm-hmm.
But experience.
Yeah, no experience, too. But the idea of, her sort of becoming invisible. I understand that she'd certainly be helpful behind the scenes and stuff. But, would they be able to put her on a shelf entirely, in those moments when...
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, in the sense, what does a vice president do for the most part?
Yeah.
I mean, she's not going to be, co-president. Although, I mean, she's got incredible amounts of, foreign experience and, But I think she... she would overshadow him, but the question is, could she subjugate herself to that role?
The interesting thing there, initially when she was approached about it, she said, I'm really not interested in elective office. But recently she's been saying, well, maybe I would. And that says to me that maybe she is being vetted by the team. And if she's being vetted and she's still in the running, that makes her certainly a lot more more serious candidate than what she was when she was saying, I'm just not interested in elective politics, period. Would she upstage Romney? I think probably initially she would on foreign policy. But he's the kind of guy that puts himself in the lead in some ways and makes sure that he is the decision maker. I don't think she could pull a Dick Cheney to George Bush
right.
maneuver.
All right, talking to R.B. Scott, journalist and author of Mitt Romney, An Inside Look at the Man and His Politics, Peter Gelsenis from the Boston Herald, and Chris Ferrone, writer for the Boston Phoenix. I said Globe earlier. Anyway, what all did you make of Ray Flynn endorsing Scott Brown in that latest campaign ad?
You know, I think that's huge. I think that's one of the problems Elizabeth Brown has had.
And Elizabeth Warren.
Did I say Brown?
Yeah, good.
Does she work for the
Herald
Boston Globe? Elizabeth Warren has had is she's failed to define herself clearly, and the fact that Ray Flynn has come out to endorse Scott Brown speaks to his strength. If Romney is still in hot contention for the presidency in November, She's going to have problems, and I really do like her and wish her well. But I watch her ads and I listen to her talk, and I'm saying, where's the beef here? Where's the difference?
What do you think, Chris?
I think this. I'm really kind of if he's going to roll out a new Democrat every week, I'm really kind of interested. I think that's going to be actually something interesting to watch because former mayor of Worcester came out. She's going to have a commercial too for Scott Brown and. I don't know. I just think the guy is so unbeatable. People just love men. Yeah. Stupid men especially.
And
absolutely love Scott Brown.
I agree.
I spoke to several people yesterday about the consequence of, the race commercial has been running nonstop over the weekend.
Yeah.
And I kind of wondered if Tom Menino needed any prompting to get off the fence, maybe this kind of drives him into Warren's arms.
That's a great call, yeah.
But people I know and people who know him said, yeah, it's kind of a delicious thing to think about, but they think in the end, you know, he'll probably go with Warren. Menino will. So he doesn't think that...
He's got to.
Yeah, he doesn't think the Flynn ad will necessarily drive that. But the ad is very good. I mean, I think it's good. And the question is, Ray hasn't been mayor for a long time, you know, for about 17 years.
They
but he stayed very much in the public
eye. Yeah, he has. He has on different things. It's true. I mean, particularly on the... Catholic issues and stuff like that. So there is that. He's the sort of classic seen now as the classic Reagan Democrat. You know.
Mm. All right. Who wants to talk about the Olympics? Have you all been watching, Peter? Do you watch them?
I watched Rafalka yesterday.
I watched
Mitt Romney's horse.
Oh, right.
Mitt's dancing horse.
That
was on in the morning.
15-year-old mare.
His pet.
15 years old. The horse is 15 years old.
You know, let's face it.
Did you know the horse was sent over there FedEx?
Yeah. So, I mean, let's face it. I was watching that dressage.
First in the morning delivery?
How much did that cost?
How much of that talent is the horse versus the rider? I mean, come on.
Oh, it's a combination of both.
Both.
You've got to have a good rider to get the horse to do what it does. But the training of the horse is pretty intricate and detailed and phenomenal, actually.
It's not like an individual sport. I mean, this is really a team, you know?
It really is. It really is a
Colbert
team.
Colbert has been massacring that every night.
Why? You're
watching. Oh, it's just been hilarious.
The dressage or just the Olympics?
No, the dressage.
Why?
No, just having fun saying dressage and then at the same time holding foam fingers up like it was, you know, a football rally or something, you know?
There are some sports that I never knew existed. I mean, it seems like every year something new comes up, like synchronized diving. Did anybody ever see that before?
That does not look easy.
I like that, though.
That does not look easy.
I don't like the synchronized swimming. That's goofball to me. Synchronized diving
is cool. It was Martin Short from Saturday Night Live.
I have a fundamental problem with all sports that are subject to the whims of judges. Because there has been, over the years, there's been so much manipulation going on in scores and so forth. So when you see synchronized diving, you say, well, here's one more where it's not based on whether you sink a last-minute basket or last-second basket. It's based on how much you impress the judges.
Well, it's like yesterday. I thought when Ali Reisman and the Russian girl tied for third, why didn't they have a runoff? You know, like another. Instead, they did this complicated mathematical formula, and who had the more difficult? Why not just do one more? You know, pull an event out of the hat and go for it.
I think the other thing about this, it seems to become more sophisticated and ramped up every 4 years. But these incredible commercials now, you know, Ryan Lochte swimming toward London. I mean, you know that. I mean, and you know. the idea too that obviously Phelps was Phelps, but this guy this was going to be his time, and it seemed that not only was did he have this strut about how well he was going to do, but it seemed that he'd become the media darling. Suddenly they were seeing I was watching these interviews with him in his shoe closet, and in his house he's got like 300 pairs of sneakers.
You're talking about Phelps?
No, Lotke.
Oh, Lotke, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's got 300 pairs of sneakers, different colors.
He was raised by the Marcoses in the Philippines, wasn't he?
amazing. I mean, and just this whole idea that this is the guy everybody was going to get behind. This is the guy that was going to attract a lot of the media goodies afterwards in terms of endorsements and stuff. I don't think it quite worked out the way he wanted it to. And Phelps is still there. And now there's there was all kinds of speculation about, how high Ali Reisman's, marketability was going to be after this. And it still may
be.
She still has a chance. Right. And she's got a goal and she's got a chance to win, I guess, one or two.
One of the individual.
Yeah, right.
Two.
So meanwhile, there was this big thing yesterday. The Americans for Tax Reform were revealing that Olympic medalists can be taxed up to $9,000 for each Olympic medal and accompanying cash prizes. But it turns out that's an old law, and it's never been applied.
No, but Marco
Rubio.
But it was
everywhere.
You asked me why Marco Rubio's crazy. This is Marco Rubio now trying to pass law. This is grandstanding at its worst.
This is the evidence you were looking for.
This is all of the facts yesterday.
Yeah, so
yeah, you're right. Rubio was writing about the Olympic Tax Elimination Act legislation to reduce winners' taxes to zero, but apparently they've never actually been taxed.
Well, you could write off all your... I mean, it takes a lot, I'm sure, to become an Olympic athlete, to win a gold medal. You could write off all that, all your running shoes, I'm sure, and this and that, and it's a total non-issue.
Well, why would you get a tax, though? I don't even understand.
Well, it's worth something.
You mean a medal itself?
Sure.
Something?
Yeah, it's worth more. It's worth more than $9,000 at auction, I'm assuming.
Oh, right, of course, on eBay.
But the answer to the question is, what did it cost you to get that medal? And that's all deductible from your taxes, so it's really a bogus issue.
All right. It's our Week in Review. I'm talking to Chris Ferrone from the Boston Phoenix, R.P. Scott, journalist and author, and Peter Galzinis from the Boston Herald. When we come back, thumbs up, thumbs down on people, places, and issues in the news this week. I'm Emily Rooney. You're listening to Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney. You're listening to Boston Public Radio. It is time for our ever-popular Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down segment on the people, places, and issues making the news this week. I'm joined here in the studio by Peter Galzinis from the Boston Herald, journalist and author R.B. Scott, and Chris Ferrone, writer for the Boston Phoenix. All right, we were just talking about Olympics, so let's start right there. Thumbs up, thumbs down. There's this Twitter account, NBC Fail. But my question is, thumbs up, thumbs down on Olympic coverage so far.
Thumbs up.
I say thumbs down.
Why?
Listening to all my feminist friends, Sarah Jackson, who's a professor at Northeastern. She actually has a great piece in Role Reboot today, just about really how sexist a lot of the coverage has been. So I'm a dude
sexist
and all, but she's actually got a lot of pretty remarkable media examples of pretty blatant sexism in coverage.
It's sports. What does she expect?
Yeah, I mean, what can you do about those bikinis at the women's volleyball?
Well, they took them away from them.
From what I understand, there's also a lot of people who really don't know about the Olympics, like Ryan Seacrest covering the Olympics.
No, that's a good point. I don't know why they've popped him in a couple of other
people.
All
right, Peter, what do you think?
Thumbs up. I get hooked on it every 4 years. I find myself
thumbs up, and I love
it.
The sexism. I love the little outfits on the gymnasts. I love the bikinis on the girls on the beach. It's great. You can't take it too seriously.
It is what it is. It's not going to change.
And it's not going to change. The women are more fun to look at. Let's just face it. All right? Okay, here's another one.
I would agree with.
Thumbs up, thumbs down on issuing spoiler alerts. NPR was doing it earlier in the week. We were doing it. I still hear it on EEI. I mean, as they say, that corn is off the cob. What do you think? Thumbs up, thumbs down on spoiler alerts, Chris?
I guess thumbs down. Let's... I really don't know. I'm really not into sports at all. I could
really?
Yeah. I grew up with a single mom, never played sports, never watched sports.
you're depraved on account of being deprived.
Yeah,
and now you hang out with feminists. I mean,
yeah, I know. I don't know what's going on.
You're really in trouble.
All right, you don't count. Peter?
Thumbs down.
Yeah, we don't need them. Thumbs down.
Thumbs down.
Kind of goofy.
All right, this is an emotional one. Thumbs up, thumbs down, and avoiding the news yourselves to avoid seeing the results. Did you do that, Peter? Thumbs up,
no,
thumbs down?
No. Thumbs down. I watched the news, and it didn't matter because even if, in a way, I almost wanted them to tell me because, then you were going to see it. I was going to watch it anyway.
Decide whether you're going to watch it.
Yeah. But, I mean, if it was, something I wanted to see, I was going to watch it anyway. So.
Thumbs up.
All right. Here's one for you, Chris. Thumbs up, thumbs down on the more conservative beach volleyball outfits for the women.
I mean, I'm going to get in trouble with someone no matter what I say here, right? I guess,
yeah.
Oh, man. You're killing me.
Be real.
Here. No, I mean, I
Rubio's
guess.
Rubio's got your name and number. He's coming after you.
I'm going to give an honest opinion here. If I want to see porn, I'll look at porn on the internet.
Do you look at porn
thumbs
on the
up?
Internet?
I don't care. Absolutely.
Thumbs up on the more conservative beach volleyball. I'm giving that a thumbs down.
Thumbs down.
Well, I actually thought the Australians did the right thing. They painted bikini bras on their tops, so it looked like that. It was perfect. So, all right, here's another one for you, Chris. Thumbs up, thumbs down on those tiny, tiny bathing suits on the men. And don't tell me you haven't watched.
No, I've watched. I've watched. Thumbs up, man. What are they going to do? Board shorts?
Exactly.
Well, they've changed, though.
They have.
4 years ago, they had the full body suits.
I know. I heard a whole thing about that. They said it was unfair or something.
Yeah.
It changes from year to year, and there's an argument that's been made that some Olympic sports ought to be done in the nude. So
it's all right for Olympic athletes, but if the guy is going to my beach this weekend,
you wouldn't want to see the nude.
Well, the other thing is, those guys, you got to say, I mean, they've got the bodies to wear them.
Yeah,
you know? I mean, they almost become. And a lot of the swimmers now, I mean, the shorts are long. So
yeah.
It's the divers,
even the women.
I think. The divers who have the real little ones.
Thumbs up on the tiny suits.
Yeah. Remember that when Kathy, as I did the piece on Kathy Rigby back in the 70s, when they had her on the balance beam naked.
Yeah.
It was absolutely beautiful, but the protests about the gorgeous body and so forth.
That was
forth.
After the fact.
Yeah, there were always some. There were always some like Natalie Coughlin and a couple of the other people who seemed to want to. They've posed. They've already posed naked in a couple of either Sports Illustrated. So I don't know if one of them has been in Playboy, but they understand the that tension that's there, and they seem to.
All right, one final. Olympic thumbs up, thumbs down. Badminton players getting tossed out. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Tossed out for intentionally losing a match.
Thumbs up.
Yeah, thumbs up. That's a fraud.
And thumbs up.
I want to admit that I never knew how to spell bad. Minton.
Badminton.
You really are depraved.
I swear.
I'm going to have to come to my backyard.
I'm admitting this.
I love
coming clean here. No, I love. I've played it several times.
It's a great sport.
I just didn't know how to spell it.
This was a good one. Yeah, definitely.
But in defense of them, that kind of thing goes on in sport all the time.
I know.
It's not just the badminton players.
Yeah, but it shouldn't happen at the Olympics.
It shouldn't be that
sophisticated about it. Right? How to do it? You're right.
All right. Thumbs up. Thumbs down. Would you eat at Chick-fil-A, Chris?
Thumbs up, because I'm going to eat there tonight with some gay friends who are going to be kissing at the kissing.
Oh, okay.
Why not? I mean, a homophobic chicken sandwich is tastes as good as any other chicken sandwich. I think the protest will be interesting, and I think it was watching just those mindless fools at their supporting Chick-fil-A on the whim of Sarah Palin the other day was just priceless on the news. So
wow,
I am going to Chick-fil-A. I will be at Chick-fil-A tonight.
RB,
I wouldn't eat there, but it has nothing to do with what's going on. I have enough health problems.
Peter?
I've never had one. So at some point I probably will, but I've never had one.
But we can go together.
Thumbs up, thumbs down. Eating at Chick-fil-A at this point is a political statement.
Yeah. No, it's
it
true.
Is. Thumbs
You're
up.
Right.
Yeah? Yeah? It is.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
RB?
Absolutely.
But not eating there isn't in Massachusetts since there's only two.
Right. I think I'm almost out of good. Oh, here's one. We'll end on this one. This is kind of cute. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Hood handing out free ice cream sandwiches on City Hall Plaza. This in the face of Mayor Menino's million-pound challenge. Thumbs up, thumbs down on Hood there.
Well, think of the jobs that Hood is saving. Yeah. Thumbs up.
I would even say Menino would say thumbs up to that. So.
Yeah, Hood has done a great job this year, and I've seen, they've been at the State House, so I'm going to give them a thumbs up.
I'm going to give them a thumbs up, too. If you can't have one ice cream sandwich, if that's all you ate all day, you'd lose pounds, you'd lose weight.
One of the coveted memories of my youth were the free hoodsies the city gave out at 4th of July.
All right. My thanks to Peter Galzinis from the Boston Herald, R.B. Scott, who's a journalist and author of Mitt Romney, An Inside Look at the Man and His Politics, and Chris Ferrone, writer for the Boston Herald. It's our Week in Review, and coming up next is, thank you all, Edgar B. Herwick III. What do you got there, Edward?
Hey, Emily. Thumbs up, thumbs down on Chariots of Fire.
Love it.
Thumbs up. Yeah, no, I agree. So we're going to be talking about how that movie and other films about the Olympics illustrate what it is about this event that keeps us coming back time and time again every 4 years.
All right, Edgar. Sounds good. I'm Emily Rooney.
I'm Edgar B. Herwick III, and you are listening to Boston Public Radio.